I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. This week, President Bush travels from Europe to the Middle East to push for the so-called roadmap to peace in meetings with Arab leaders and then later with Prime Ministers Ariel Sharon and Mahmoud Abbas. The roadmap has been embraced by the Palestinian leadership as a way out of the current violence. It has also been approved with less enthusiasm by Israeli leaders. But there are powerful constituencies that are working against the roadmap. Last week, we talked about the resistance of the Palestinian militant group Hamas. Today, we'll be talking about those right-wing members of the Israeli government, those who say that the roadmap is a recipe for ongoing strife. You know, for this perspective, you just have to look to the land where Israeli settlers and Palestinians fight it out over barbed wire fences, where every home and every hilltop is as much a symbol as it is a person's home. Connection listeners, how strong is the Israeli settler movement? Is it powerful enough to derail the roadmap? And is Ariel Sharon committed to putting peace with the Palestinians before the settler call for a greater Israel? Join us. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. Now, a little later on the show, we'll be talking with a journalist who writes extensively on the settler movement in Israel. But first, we're going to Jerusalem to the Israeli tourism minister, Benny Alon. He's joining us now on the phone from the Israeli parliament, the Knesset. Welcome to The Connection, Mr. Alon.
Shalom from Jerusalem to you, Mr. Gordon, to the audience.
I'd like your reaction, if I could get it, please, to the recent words of the Israeli prime minister, Ariel Sharon, once the political patron saint of the settlers, now refers to some of that land as being occupied, Palestinian land being occupied by Israel. It seems like a big shift.
Yeah, he said, and then he regretted. But anyway, he cannot take back this tragic mistake. If Judah and Samaria, Beit El, Beit Lechem, and Shiloh, it's occupied territory and we are foreigners. So the justification is with the Arabs. We are foreigners also in Tel Aviv, in Haifa, and everywhere. Maybe we have to go back to Europe and then to look for another home, maybe in Germany, in Poland. But this is something unforgivable, even when it's just a mistake.
So what does that mean for someone with your background? Does that mean that you really cannot stay in that government as long as such a big shift has been made?
No, there are two dimensions. There is the ideology, and this is a sin against the ideology. And there is the practical dimension. In the practical dimension, we in the government now, we were 11 against 12. If I'll take the four absent with the seven against and the 12 that were pro the acceptance of the roadmap. So next time, I hope that we'll have the majority and Prime Minister Sharon will obey. If not, we'll see what can we do. But I think that the most important thing now is to fight inside the government and to make sure that Oslo Accords, that started with high expectations and many, many, many left-winger liberals that sing songs for the peace and doves in the air and gave Nobel Prize for Peace to Mr. Yasser Arafat, the righteous, concluded with deep disappointment, with bloodshed, more than 1,000 victims innocent in the middle of the centers of the cities of Israel, and I don't know how many innocent Palestinians were killed. And that's thanks to those liberal leftists that brought us so-called peace once, and they're going to do the same now. I hope and I wish that we'll prevent this disaster on time.
Are you saying that the roadmap in its present condition will just bring more of that same violence?
Absolutely. This is a road trap with no courage, no creativity. They have no courage to deal with the real issues like the refugees, like Jerusalem, like settlements, all of those issues that when President Clinton and Prime Minister Barack raised it on the negotiations table, when they came to the final status agreement on Camp David, in Camp David, the explosion came immediately.
But the roadmap, Mr. Alon, does deal with settlement activity. In the first phase, it says that all settlement activity will be frozen and that settlements built in the last 2 years will be dismantled. Those are in the words of the roadmap.
No, Mr. Gordon, the roadmap says that the issue of settlement will be in the end, like the issue of Jerusalem and like the issue of the refugees and the right of return. He just speaks about the outposts that were settled after the year 2001. And this is something that it's not a big deal. It's not the issue of the settlements.
So you're saying that it would be acceptable for you to have some of those outposts dismantled, some of those Israeli settlers moved off that land?
I don't need the foreigners to force me to do things according to the legal system. If an outpost it's not according to the legal system, so we replace the area in another place. We did it in the past. We don't need to have a real issue from this. If foreigners want to force me to uproot me from the biblical heartland and to unjustify my presence in the state of Israel, this is another issue.
By foreigner, do you mean the Americans and the EU and the Russians, the people who are the quartet pushing the roadmap? Is that who you mean by foreigners?
Yes, but it is a big division. The quartet and Europeans that made so many troubles to our nation, this is one issue. And the rivers of Mississippi and Colorado and the rivers of USA are made only from water, not from Jewish blood. And for us, USA, it's a nation of mercy. And because of it, it's so difficult to understand why those double standards? Why it's so kosher to bring down Saddam Hussein and not to say that he can stay as a virtual president and under him some Abu Gilda or some another one will be the prime minister? And why in Israel that suffered so much before everyone else, September 2000, not only in 9/11, we started the suffering from those terrorists. Why we have not this luxury to survive and to fight for our survival by uprooting the infrastructure of the terror?
So what are you going to do now? What will your party, the National Union Party, you as a cabinet minister in Mr. Sharon's cabinet?
We are going to work very hard in order to have majority against the road trap and to prevent bloodshed and to save our country from disaster and danger.
But if you get several thousand settlers to go to a demonstration, to a protest, is that going to change something?
This,
are you talking about
no,
more violence?
This is not my part. This is the ex-parliamentaric parts of those that want to demonstrate their democracy by demonstration. This is the way, this is the system. My part is inside the cabinet, mm-hmm. inside the parliament, to convince my friends, to try to convince my prime minister that he is going and falling into a trap. This road trap, it's a real trap. It's a real danger to our very existence.
I just want to ask you, though, what other alternatives are there? Because the roadmap is being considered by your own prime minister is not a particularly attractive alternative, but perhaps the best alternative that's available now. You say you want to talk him out of that. Doesn't that mean that you're just saying more violence, better we continue the way we are?
No, the alternative is very simple, and the Prime Minister Sharon was one of those that spoke about this alternative years before me. The alternative says that there are only two states in Palestine. One is the Arab-Palestinian state, the capital is Amman, and one is Israel, a Jewish state, and together, two states for two peoples in the two banks of the river, and in conjunction with those two real states, we can solve the problem of the Arabs that are in the West Bank.
You know there's not a lot of international support for this, Mr. Alon. You know that it sounds like...
Question of time and question of determination. So I'm not working in short term. I'm working for the long term.
But it's a question of principle that I'm asking you about. Would the Chinese ship all the Tibetans out of China? Would the Greeks move all the Turks off the island of Cyprus? I mean, is that international law says you don't just move people out because there's a problem?
I didn't speak about moving physically people. The opposite is right. You have to give citizenship to those Arabs that have no citizenship yet.
Yeah, you give them Jordanian citizenship, you deny
That's
them
right.
Israeli citizenship. And
why
and
Israeli citizenship? They don't want to be citizens in a Jewish state. We have to give them Jordanian citizenship, and the displaced Arabs that suffering 55 years and were transferred already 55 years ago, and until now, four generations are in miserable conditions in refugee camps, and they don't recognize themselves as citizens of those camps. They want and demand to return to Tel Aviv and to Haifa, and no Israeli politician, neither from the left or from the right, going to give it to them.
Mr. Alon, you will remember much better than I do 1995, when the determination of the right wing fired up the passions of the people to the point where an Israeli prime minister was assassinated because there was a determination not to proceed with one view of peace. Has the right wing learned anything? Are you worried that this is a direction where you're going already again?
Yes, we are worried, and yes, I hope that everyone learned the lesson from all of the sides, the right wing and the left wing. It's not so simple to say to 500,000 Jews, 250,000 that living in three generations already in Judah and Samaria, and 250,000 that living in neighborhoods of Jerusalem that were before 67 under Jordan occupation. Not so simple to tell them, we are going to uproot you, be nice and polite, and just go out. So civil war can be here, and this will be the end of the state. And we have to do everything to prevent it and to learn from the assassination of late Prime Minister Rabin how we can be the enemy, the worst enemy of ourselves. So this is a very, very important question. And I hope that everyone learned the lesson.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Benny Alon is member of the National Union Party, more important, Minister of Tourism in the current Israeli government, and one of those very opposed to the roadmap. Connection listeners, how strong is that opposition? Is it powerful enough to derail the roadmap? And is the Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon committed to putting peace with the Palestinians before, for example, the settlers' call for a greater Israel? I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. Connection listeners, this time last week we were talking about the Palestinian militant group Hamas and the options and the ideas that they had to make sure that the roadmap to peace did not go ahead. We've had a chance to listen to the determination of Israel's tourism minister, Benny Alon, to make sure that the roadmap doesn't go ahead. It's a key week for that, for this conversation, because, of course, President Bush will be meeting with the two prime ministers on Wednesday. We'd like to have you in on the conversation. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. And I'm joined now from a studio close to Tel Aviv by Ofer Shelach. He's a journalist and news analyst for the Israeli daily newspaper Yediot Aronot, and he writes extensively about the settlers. Ofer, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Dick, for having me.
I want to start where Mr. Alon left off, when he was actually using words like civil war as something possible under the current situation. You have to help me with this. Is that the rhetoric of a politician, or is this something that the right wing is actually talking about in realistic terms?
Well, you know, a term like civil war can be used for different purposes and in different contexts. Basically, this Minister Alon is not the first one to utter these words in the last 48 hours. It was actually preceded by Minister Lieberman, another right-wing member of the cabinet. And I think it shows the kind of predicament that the right wing is in right now, the settler movement, especially right now in Israel, in that they want to threaten, if you will, but are trying to be very careful about their words. So they're using words like civil war, but then when you ask them, they say they actually mean the displacement of the settlers. So it can work both ways.
How has the settlers' own standing changed in the last week? What importance do you attach to the Israeli Prime Minister's use of the word occupation, given his history as such a supporter of the settlements?
I think what it did was actually break down the main marketing tool that the settlers have had, the right wing has had, and we have to realize that when you're talking about the right wing, the settlers are only part of it, and they're actually not only the Likud, but even more to the right. There's a lot of support that's coming from within Israel. So we'll talk about the settlers, but I don't really mean I don't just limit it to the people who live in the West Bank. But what happened was, for the last 35 years, there was always the connection between those who were for the idea of Greater Israel for ideological, religious reasons, like Minister Alon, and those, and now you're talking about the majority of Israelis, who just have a distrust of Arabs and Palestinians, and supported the occupation for security reasons. And I think that link has been damaged by Prime Minister Sharon, because when somebody like him, and he's one of Israel's Mr. Security, he is right now, maybe after Yitzhak Rabin is gone, the Mr. Security in Israel.
Right.
When he says occupation, and he means that this is bad for Israel, that holding those territories is bad for Israel, now this link is broken, this linkage is broken, and the settlers are left only with the ideological part of it, which is supported by a very small minority in Israel.
So do you look at the Prime Minister's switch in language as something that was calculated, something to preface the negotiations with Bush? This is not a man prone to making verbal gaffes and mistakes like that.
Well, now this the $64 million question, isn't it? What does Sharon? We've all turned into psychoanalysts with Mr. Sharon for the past 2 years. There's always the question of what does he mean.
Yeah.
And I can tell you for sure one thing: even his cabinet ministers don't know what exactly he means. And I've talked to several of them. And there is the analysis that says, well, Mr. Sharon is actually under a lot of pressure. And you have to realize that the pressure is coming from America. And for somebody like Benny Alon, it's very important to be on your show, maybe even more important than being on Israeli media right now. And when he talked to you, he used the word liberal, which is actually a word that we don't use in the Israeli political discourse, because he knows that your listeners the American public, in their interest in the subject, will determine how much pressure Washington applies on Jerusalem. And I think what happened to Sharon, to connect to connect this to your question, what happened to Sharon, he was under pressure from President Bush to deliver in some way. And I think what he tried to do is to put an ideological cloak on the whole thing. And he just, that's why he used the word occupation. And I think he, Minister Alon said before, he was somewhat startled by the reaction to it.
All right, let's stay with me now, if you will, Ofer. I want to bring a couple of callers in. First to Ashburn, North Carolina. Robert's on the line. Hi, Robert.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine, thank you for calling.
Yes, I appreciate you taking my call. I have more of a comment rather than a question. You know, it's a very difficult situation that's taking place right now with this struggle that the Palestinians and the Israelis are facing. But I wanted to comment about one particular thing that everybody's jumping on, and that's when Sharon said the word occupation. I mean, gee, come on, this guy's a human being. I mean, he's not God, and he's not perfect, and yet everybody jumped on that one comment. If he, under the stress of the moment, slipped and used the word occupation because everybody else uses that word, I don't see why they should hold that against the man. But
Robert, I've got some of what he said here, and it's a little bit more specific than to be a mistake. Sharon said, and I'm quoting him here, "You may not like the word, but what is happening is occupation. Holding 3.5 million Palestinians under occupation is a bad thing for Israel, for the Palestinians, and for the Israeli economy." And just like Ofer was saying, I'm not going to try and interpret it, but
right.
It didn't sound like a mistake.
Okay, well, that was just a side comment, but the main thing that I wanted to comment about was the Jews in the land of Israel and the struggle with the Palestinian people. I sympathize with the Palestinian people, but this struggle has been going on for ages. And I think the complicated factor here is that on one hand, the Jews who have been persecuted just over and over and over get tired of it, and they want a land of their own where they can go and find some safety. And the struggle is a desperate struggle to say, this is our safe home, go away and leave us alone.
So you would support the Israeli settlers who say, we have a right to this hilltop, we have a right to this valley?
Well, definitely, and I'd like to say why. I believe that from a religious standpoint, and I am a Protestant Christian. I've read the Tanakh, the Bible, and I know that from a religious standpoint that it belongs to the Jews, because I believe the testimony that was given in there stated that Abraham had purchased the land, and God promised it to the Jews. So I support the Jews in that. From a religious standpoint.
Now, Robert, just hang with me for a minute here, because I want to go back to Ofer here. He would know that Benny Alon, for example, has been spending a lot of time in Washington recently lobbying politicians there, particularly Christian politicians, many of them evangelical Christian politicians who have exactly the same understanding of the Bible that Robert is talking about. And Ofer, are you saying that this is an effective political weapon within Israel now to court the American Christian perspective?
I don't think it's aimed at the people of Israel. It's actually really aimed, as I said before, it's really aimed at President Bush. I think the Minister Alon's analysis of the situation is that Prime Minister Sharon is basically acting under American pressure. And you go to the source, you go to the American pressure, you go to those communities in the United States that you think may influence the administration to act otherwise. And then once the pressure is off, Mr. Sharon can go back to being his old self.
And Robert, when you listen to the way that the debate and the preparations for the meetings are coming out, when Ofer talks about, you know, Americans putting pressure on the administration, has he got it right there? I mean, would you, for example, be the type of person who'd sign a petition, send it to the White House, say Israel is a land for the Jews, not for the Palestinians?
Yes, I definitely would, mainly because, and the argument's been printed in the papers and read on the radio and television, that the Palestinian people lived in the land in small numbers. And then all of a sudden, when the Jew was put there, because England recognized that the Jews were just being mercilessly persecuted around the world and they needed their safe home, they supported putting the Jewish people there and saying, okay, this is your traditional home. And then all of a sudden, the Arabs around there started, especially the religious element, Religion plays a big role in this, so we have to talk about it.
Robert, I've got you on that, and I thank you for your call. I do want to move on. 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Betty's joining us. Hi, Betty.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling.
I understand that the Israeli settlers are not only exempt from military service and the largest benefactor of military protection, but are heavily subsidized financially by the Israeli government. Since the settlements have been deemed illegal according to international law, and since Israel is the largest recipient of U.S. foreign aid, aren't we indirectly aiding and abetting violation of international law with our taxpayer dollar?
I'm going to put your second question directly to Ofer, who would know that better than I am. Just a correction before that, though, that settlers themselves aren't exempt from military service. Some Jews, based on how Orthodox they are, can be exempt, but it's not based on where they live. Is that right, Ofer?
Yes, the settlers actually, the settlers, the second generation of settlers is a growing, I wouldn't say power, but it's growing presence within the Israeli military. And also, not all settlements were declared illegal. There's a debate going on about that. When we talk about illegal outposts in Israel that Minister Alon also referred to earlier, we're talking about different thing than most settlements. There is a political debate going on about the settlement, and also a legal debate about the legality of settling in what you would call, or somebody would call, occupied territories. But to go to Betty's second question.
Yeah.
Once before, the United States is about to give Israel about $9 billion worth of security for loans. Now, the last time this was done was back in 92 with actually President Bush Sr. Did that at the last days of his presidency. And then there was an attachment to that agreement which said every dollar given to settlements will be actually taken off, will be deducted of that sum. It was $10 billion at the time, which was given to Israel as security. And I think this is going to be the case this time as well. So the United States will support Israel in a way, but will try to not support the settlements. So then perhaps that, at least on the factual basis, answers the question.
And Betty, when you listen to Israel's prime minister using the word occupation, you know that the meeting is coming up this week between the Palestinian Israeli prime minister and the president. You look at the forces that are pushing for peace, for the roadmap, or rather, I should just say for the roadmap, and those that are against it. Do you think there's going to be progress made?
I have my doubts. I know who is supporting President Bush on this, and it's three factions. It's AIPAC, the Jews here in the United States, and the right wing, fundamentalists, and the military. Israel is our largest recipient of military aid.
And so you're saying that even in the interest of the president, the status quo is better than finding some route to peace?
I think he'll just stall the whole thing. I don't think it's going to work with him. It's got to be somebody else other than Bush, or he's jeopardizing his election next year.
All right. Thanks for that, Betty. Ofer, how is the president's commitment seen here? I mean, certainly if we were talking about this 2 years ago or even a year ago, the idea of President Bush in the Middle East sitting between those two sides would have seemed quite surprising. How is his current involvement being viewed?
It is surprising, and I think it was surprising for Prime Minister Sharon as well. I think if you would have asked Prime Minister Sharon about 2 months ago, if he was going to be in this kind of situation where he's basically forced to accept the roadmap lock, stock, and barrel and not be able to play games and sort of delay the decision for a while, I think he would have been surprised, or he would have said that the chances are against it. And I think President Bush's commitment at this stage is surprising, and, according to your point of view, encouraging or not. The thing is this. I think the United States, because of the success of the Iraqi campaign, and I say so far, because, you know, if that campaign is not consolidated in a way that will prevent terrorism against the American troops in Iraq, guerrilla warfare against American troops in Iraq, which is to be expected, I'm sorry to say, if things don't work out within the next few months, that will definitely affect, that has affected and will definitely affect, I think, the American commitment and President Bush's commitment towards the Middle East. So far, he's definitely surprised everybody with his determination. And I think that determination is the key factor to determine whether the roadmap is going to work.
And will the measure of that determination be evidence or be obvious at the first meeting, at the second meeting? How do you see that playing out?
Well, the meetings right now this week, all the meetings that President Bush is going to have are basically kickoff meetings. They're supposed to kick off the process. You got to realize that there are going to be roadblocks basically on every turn. And
right.
The Israeli military can say that the Palestinians are not doing their share in trying to prevent, to fight terrorism, or even do something actively, not because of not malevolently, but just because their job is to prevent terror acts in Israel, and maybe kill somebody or engage in a large scale operation and so forth. And on the other hand, of course, you have Hamas and other movements who are going to do the best they can to just kill the whole thing. So basically, there are so many things that you have to are still going to be argued. There are going to be so many points where every side is going to say, well, the other side's not keeping his word, that I think it's always up to the referee, and the referee is the Americans.
Connection listeners, 1-800-423-8255. President George Bush is taking a chair later this week between prime ministers of Israel and Palestinian people to discuss the roadmap for peace. Both sides, the Palestinians and the Israelis, have constituencies that desperately want to stop it. What do you think are the chances that the leaders will be able to push it ahead, or is this just one more failed effort in the Middle East? 1-800-423-TALK to join us. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Roadblocks on the roadmap, part two of our series. Last week we talked about the Palestinian militants who are determined to make sure that the roadmap does not proceed. Today we're talking about the settlers and their supporters, both in the United States and Israel and in other countries, who are determined that the roadmap not proceed. And we have with us on the program to help us a news analyst and journalist with the Israeli daily newspaper, Yediot Ahronot. His name is Ofer Shelach, and he's joining us from a studio in Tel Aviv. I wonder, Ofer, based on the reporting that you've done, if you can just give us a bit of an overview. I find that when we talk about the settlers, we perhaps are a little bit too inclined to speak of them as if they're just one group of people all with the same point of view. But I would imagine there's a considerable number of people living in the settlements who are there simply for economic reasons, because they can get cheap housing, and another number of people who are there for really strong ideological reasons. How does it break down?
Well, that's an excellent point, Dick, because when the settling was going on at full scale, actually the slogan was "Come live 5 minutes from Kfar Saba," which is a town on the other side of the border, on the pre-67 Israeli side of the border.
You mean you can be
that
close
is,
to shopping here? Is that what they meant?
That is, you can not only shopping, but most of the settlers who do not work within the settlement system, they're not teachers, they're not officials, or what have you, work inside pre-67 Israel. That is, basically, we're talking about sleeping towns, mostly, about sleeping towns serving the area of Tel Aviv, the main metropolitan area of Israel. So therefore,
so no industry really to speak of in the settlements. We call them bedroom
communities. And the drawing point was Israel is so small that you can actually live there. Realize the all-Israeli dream of having a house with a garden, no matter how small the garden is, and then drive in half an hour, be in Tel Aviv in the morning and work there. Mm-hmm. So a lot of – and it's cheap, of course. It was heavily subsidized. The land came cheap relative to land within Israel. So basically very many newlyweds, you know, young families. And
a good number of Americans as well, right?
Yeah. The Americans usually, at least on the face of it, seem to be a lot on the ideological side, actually. We have imported our share of, I could even say, zealots from your side of the ocean. But by and large, if we try to break it down, I would say definitely 80% of those living in Judea and Samaria are people who came there for economic reason, for quality of life reason, not for ideological reason. On the other hand, there is the point that I discussed before, and that is this movement has very many supporters who are not settlers, who live inside pre-67 Israel.
All right, thanks for that. 1-800-423-8255 to Noam, who's joining us now from Boston. Hi, Noam.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for getting me on the show. So, I have my own idea about this, but let me raise it as a question to Ofer Shelach. So, I'm an Israeli, by the way. I'm now in Boston. Just what does the settlers still are not a very large group, but they. I want to repeat the question that you raised at the beginning of the show. Can they
derail the roadmap?
Derail the roadmap, right. Can they affect the rest of the population? And how? I think that they can, but I'm interested in what Ofer Shelach has to say about this.
Okay, Ofer.
I think if the Israeli government is determined enough, they cannot derail the roadmap. Or the peace process or a political process in general. They cannot do that. They don't have, and actually this was shown also in what Minister Alon said earlier. They don't have the political power, and they always have a problem of protest against a right-wing government and a right-wing a prime minister like Mr. Sharon because of the point that I made before. Because the point of security is very strong with the majority of Israelis, and people will not believe them if Prime Minister Sharon goes on with the process that even entails going back to the June 4th, 1967 borders. Most Israelis will believe that their security is being served, and they will not go along with the settlers' claim that this is against Israel's security, and then they will be left with the ideological part of it, which is supported by maybe tens of thousands of Israelis, maybe 100,000 Israelis. Definitely it's not a political majority.
I don't think they will,
yeah.
If I may, I'm not sure that they will not believe the settlers, because Sharon saying that going back to 67 borders will be interpreted just like what Benny Alon said, and I think a big part of the population, as resulting from American pressure and not from really, I mean, that would be contradicting everything he said up to this point.
Yes, it's true, but I've once discussed this with a leading Israeli pollster, and mm-hmm. and that was regarding the peace settlement with Syria, not with the Palestinians, but I think the point still applies, and that is, I asked her when they poll people about a peace agreement, what do the people mean by the words peace agreement, and she said, anything that the government brings to the table. And this was a government headed by a labor leader like Ehud Barak, or by a Likud leader, definitely by a Likud leader like Begin at the time when we were talking about Egypt, or by Sharon. I think people in Israel basically have a trust of what the government is going to do, the majority of people. And also, you got to realize that in the Camp David, when the Camp David summit meeting took place in 2000, most of the polls conducted by Ehud Barak basically showed that people will support, a majority of people will support the kind of agreement drawn by President Clinton, and that will definitely apply to something that agreed to by a Likud government headed by Ariel Sharon.
All right, Noam, thanks for your call. 1-800-423-TALK to join us. Next to Catherine. Catherine's calling in from Wellesley, Massachusetts. Hi, Catherine.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm calling to comment on the biased and incomplete coverage of the conflict. You know, I've been listening to the station frequently for the last week and a half, and there's been lots of coverage on the roadmap and now this program on the dismantlement of the recent settlements, but I haven't heard anything on the 8-meter-high wall that is currently being constructed around the West Bank by the Israeli government. And I certainly think this event, the wall, that is, merits immediate and ample coverage. And I think if there were such coverage, then Americans could finally get a realistic understanding of the Middle East conflict and why there isn't peace yet, instead of being grossly misinformed, such as like the caller who commented on Sharon slipping up by referring to the occupied territories, who apparently didn't realize that there is an occupation going on. And
Catherine, let me turn to Ofer just for his perspective on the wall that's going up. It's certainly something that is covered, but I don't have much of a sense of how it factors in the coverage and in the discussion dispute within Israel or between Israelis and Palestinians now. Ofer?
It's very interesting to think about actually the settlers' point of view regarding the wall. You got to realize first that the wall was seen at first as basically a security measure. And it is a security measure, but the history of Israel shows us that things that are being done for security reasons end up being the final political settlement. And we like to say in Israel that Israel's borders were not drawn by politicians, but by the bulldozer. And once the settler leaders, like Benny Alon, realized that this was going on, that basically the 1967 borders are being reset, redrawn by that security. It's not actually a wall. It's a security system.
What do you mean it's not actually a wall? We see photographs of it in the newspaper here. Is this big concrete slab?
What you saw basically are walls, I think, are walls. There are two or three points along the border where there are direct firing lines from Arab villages into Israeli towns. And once that shooting started in October of 2000, walls were built there. But actually, the security system that we're talking about is not an 8-meter-high wall. It's a very elaborate security system, much similar to that which Israel has in its borders with Egypt or Lebanon or Syria. So, but it is a de facto border being set up. And the settlers realize now that once the people inside Israel feel safer, feel less of a threat to themselves because of terrorism, because of that wall, they will also be less inclined to see the settlers as some of their own and be more receptive of a political agreement. So that wall is not, I don't know how it's being shown in the United States, but it's not a thing to hide the occupation. It's basically the opposite, seen by most Israelis, seen as the opposite. It is seen as a setting up of the final border.
Now, Ofer, eventually or ultimately, Ariel Sharon is going to make political decisions based on what he thinks is right and what he thinks the Israeli public will tolerate or accept or welcome at that discussion table over the roadmap. There was a poll, I think, published last week that said some 62% of Israelis favor an end to the occupation of the territories. But I never really know what to make of a poll like that, because it doesn't say, you know, within the next few months as a result of these talks or just generally over time.
We have a very popular song in Israel that's about 35 years old now that's called Tomorrow. And there's a line there, tomorrow the army, all the soldiers will turn back and become civilians. But it's always tomorrow, you know, it's never today. I think There are going to be two tests. One is the internal test of Ariel Sharon himself. I will, if I have a few minutes or 2 or 3 minutes, say something about Ariel Sharon's view of the world, of Israel's place in the Middle East. And basically, historically, it's been a very grim view. It's been a view that according to which we will be here and we will have to fight for centuries. And you have to assume, you have to have a degree of optimism to sign a peace agreement. And will Ariel Sharon, 75-year-old Ariel Sharon, be able to find within himself that degree of optimism? That's the first big question. Mm-hmm. I think once we are over that, in the current, in the present political situation in Israel, he will have no problem achieving a majority, a political majority in Israel. And if he goes to elections again, based on a peace agreement that he has and says, okay, give me your support, and I will implement that peace agreement, I think he will become the first prime minister ever in Israel to have more than half the Knesset of parliament on his side in on voting for his party.
But if Ariel Sharon was able to take some form of a peace agreement to the polls and get the majority that you're describing, that would be a Likud party majority, would he then proceed with a peace that is anything like that described in the roadmap? Because even his own party doesn't really want to stand behind him on this.
Yeah, but his own party, you got to realize that Sharon won the elections in the vast majority that he did because of him himself and because of the situation and not because of the people of his party. His members of Knesset know that they are powerless. And actually, in the way Israel works, members of cabinet are powerless to stop a determined prime minister. The only other, and I say this regretfully, but the only other a powerful force in Israeli politics is actually the army. The only organization that can derail such a force is the army, because if the army is trusted by Israelis more than the politicians, and if the army chiefs say that this is against Israel's security, this will cause a real problem. I don't see this happening. I think Sharon has all the freedom in the world. Does he have the will? Does he have the determination? Will he not, as many people believe, turn back on the first excuse? And unfortunately, there are a lot of Palestinians who are determined to give us that excuse, if right. you will. Will he turn back? That's the major question. But if he goes forth, he will prosper.
Ofer Shelah, thanks so much for being with us on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Ofer is a journalist and news analyst for the Israeli daily newspaper, Yediot Ahronot. We were joined earlier by Benny Alon, Israel's Minister of Tourism. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.